gave them the right to charge us for water and land they didn't create. We should not be paying anything for our existence on this earth. Let that sink in. Let it scrape against everything that you've been taught. Because the most insane idea humanity ever normalized is that you owe money simply for being alive. You were born here without consent on a planet you did not create, under a sky that no government ever hung, breathing air that no corporation manufactured, and somehow you start life already in debt. That's not normal. That's not moral. That is not even sane. Explain to me how land became owned. Explain how water became a bill. Explain how shelter became rent, movement became a license, and rest became something you have to earn after selling most of your waking hours. They didn't just monetize labor, they monetized survival. And the moment survival has a price tag, freedom is gone. Because if you must comply to be allowed to live, that is not choice. That is coercion, wearing a suit and calling itself civilization. And don't insult people by calling this just how the world works. That phrase is the psychological gag they stuff in your mouth before they tighten the leash. Miss enough payments and watch how fast the mask drops. They don't just take your house. They don't just shut off your utilities. They take your mobility. They take your dignity. They cage your body, all because you failed to keep up with the subscription fee for being alive. That's not order. That is a threat backed by force. Work itself is not the enemy. Contribution is natural. Humans have always built, always grown, always created, and always shared. What is evil is when contribution stops being voluntary and becomes a condition for survival. What is evil is when fear of hunger, homelessness, and medical neglect is used as the whip. And that fear is not accidental. It's engineered. It keeps you obedient, tired, and arguing with your neighbor instead of questioning the system that's draining you dry. No moral system, none, can justify charging human beings for access to the earth they were born on. If a system requires you to earn the right to exist, then that system is illegitimate at its core. And if hearing this makes you uncomfortable, good. That discomfort is the sound of a lie cracking. You're not lazy for questioning this. You're not crazy for feeling it's wrong. You're dangerous because you're starting to realize the truth. You were never meant to pay for your own existence.
Yeah, and what that guy said was spot on, folks. This is what woke me up back in the beginning when I was 4 years old, what made me see the world so differently from when I was a very small child, was when I first found out that we had to pay to be alive. This is not natural, folks. And I don't think it's supposed to be that way, and I think it's been a recent invention. I think this whole mentality of pay to be alive and everything has a dollar value is something very recent. I don't think it existed when we built all that old stuff from the old world. We couldn't have built all those beautiful buildings and any of that stuff if people were being paid by the hour to do that sort of stuff. So I just think it's something to think about. You know, and if we didn't have to pay to be alive, there wouldn't be all this control of the world by billionaires. I mean, money's basically there to create scarcity, to put you, me, and other people in a state of scarcity. That's what it's for. It's not there because people need it for power. Well, I mean, they do need it for power, but they're not really interested in money. They're interested in control, and that's what money's for. That's why they call it currency, you know. It's just how you think about things. But I don't think we could have built any of that stuff in the old world if we had to pay to be alive and if people were working by the hour to do that sort of stuff. But anyway, yeah, look, I've been away for 3 weeks. It's been 3 weeks, I think, since I did a walk and talk. There's Jeff doing one over there. I suppose we'll say hello because he's coming this way. So here he is. I just had a chat to him. He's the man himself. What are you up to, brother? Doing a walk?
Yeah, you got to keep up with this stuff. I know you took some time off in the forest, which is awesome. I actually took some time off, too. It was great. I didn't really, check anything for, almost a week.
Mm.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, I
highly recommend it.
10 days where I just didn't do anything. I was hardly online at all. I think I've sent you one comment. I made one post on something.
You were deleted off X?
I got my account was deleted on X, and then suddenly I was back on X. It was really weird. Like, I don't know what happened. They just said, your account has been fully suspended. Do not try to open another one, blah, blah, blah. And then I got an email the next day saying, we've restored your account. And I'm like, okay, well, there you go. I didn't even know anything about it, you know, so I don't know. Yeah, that's what happens.
Well, but we should let people know we're going to try to get to Liverpoco August 10th to 15th.
Yeah, I've got to do a video for Liverpoco today, actually. They've been asking me, so
cool.
I'm going to do that.
All right, so if you're in Europe, we'll try to make it there. We'll see. Apparently, a few ships have started to move through the strait. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's up and down, up and down. It's like a fucking yo-yo. Who knows what they're doing? It's crazy. It's a puppet show at this stage.
The apocalypse.
Yeah.
All right, have a good one.
All right, brother. So, yeah, the people that you run into. What was I saying? Yeah, we shouldn't have to pay to be alive. But it's been a puppet show. I mean, the whole Iranian conflict, it's all about shutting down the supply chain, and it always has been, and it's just up and down and up and down. Trump talking about the Abraham Accords, mandating that all Arab nations sign the Abraham Accords. Like, and bear in mind that there were 57 Arab nations who all offered peace to Israel. All you got to do is agree to a two-state solution so the Palestinians have got some of their land still. But Israel wouldn't have anything to do with it.
The Israeli Prime Minister came here today and said that Israel is surrounded by those who want to destroy it, an enemy. We're here, members of a Muslim Arab committee mandated by 57 Arab and Muslim countries. And I can tell you here, very unequivocally, all of us are willing to, right now, guarantee the security of Israel in the context of Israel ending the occupation and allowing for the emergence of a Palestinian state, independent state. He is creating that danger because he simply does not want the two-state solution. Can you ask the Israeli officials, what is their endgame? Other than just wars and wars and wars, ask any Israeli official, what is their plan for peace? You'll get nothing because they're only thinking of the first step. We're going to go destroy Gaza, inflame the West Bank, destroy Lebanon.
And Israel says it's the Arab world that is being irresponsible, and it's the Arab world that is causing all the problems. It's ridiculous. And even all that, I mean, it's all falling apart. See, Israel will not allow America to have any type of peace deal that keeps Iran intact. They want their little puppet president, the son of the last tyrant that they had in there, the last Shah, who was an absolute tyrant, they want this guy in place. And nothing else will do. That's what they want. They want their Greater Israel project. They want to be able to keep bombing Lebanon. And they're bombing Lebanon like they're bombing villages, they're bombing houses in the middle of the night, just suburbs with children asleep in the beds. No military targets there. They're just villages full of people trying to live peaceful lives, and Israel's just coming in and bombing them. Stealing children from West Bank all the time. They come in the night, and they've stolen like 1,700 children from homes in West Bank since 2023. It's crazy, some of the stuff that they do. And yeah, like, I've been offline for 3 weeks. I went up to the redwood forest and I just basically sat with the trees, got offline, didn't have anything to do with the internet. And it was really healing, actually. It was really relaxing and really healing to do that. And I'll talk to you about that a little bit later. But to get up with what is going on, I mean, really it's all just the same. It doesn't matter that I've had 3 weeks off. I mean, the Iranian peace process has just been like a yo-yo. Trump keeps saying that there's peace deals on the table and we're going to know by tomorrow what's happening. And Iran says that we haven't even spoken to him. And Israel says, well, basically, we don't care. We're not going to allow any peace to happen anyway. And it's just the same thing. The supply chain is still shutting down. Travel is still getting more difficult. I'm going back to, probably back to Acapulco soon for a little while. And then I'm probably going to try to get to Europe, travel permitting, and hopefully do the Liverpulco conference as well. See, I can't see the point in trying to stop my life. I figure even if travel's going to become difficult and the supply chain's going to break down, I'm still just going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm going to end up wherever I'm supposed to end up. But it's all just more of the same stuff, you know. The Hunter virus, and of course, Hunter means scam in Hebrew. I'm sure so many people have reported on all of this sort of stuff, so there's not really a lot I need to tell you. We saw Israel's atrocities towards the flotilla people, of course. Ben Gavir just grabbing that woman and throwing her to the floor and saying, welcome to hell.
Free, free Palestine!
Check it.
ברוכים הבאים לישראל, אנחנו בעלי הבית.
ככה צריך.
ישראל חי. עם ישראל חי.
זיכוי, כל המטרה כאן זה לראות שאין אנשים בתהליך.
Yeah, and they kept these people in stress positions, and there were numerous cases of broken bones, something like 36 broken bones, 42 injuries, people with injuries all over their backs from being shoved with the butt of a rifle, like, you know, being bashed with the butt of a rifle into your back, stuff like that. Terrible treatment, and rapes, of course. Many of the women and possibly even some of the men were raped by the IDF before they were deported. This is a favorite thing for Israel to do. Nacha, it's okay. The dogs, they get very protective, folks. This is Gordy. This is a pit bull who comes to visit sometimes. It's okay, Nacha, Sol. It's okay. Gordy's a friend. It's okay, Gordy. They get very protective, and it's interesting that the pit bull backs down to the chihuahuas. But anyway, yeah, the prisoners were treated absolutely horribly by the Israeli IDF. And you know, these people were kidnapped, folks. You've got to understand this. They weren't arrested. For people to be arrested, they need to be within some jurisdiction. And these were civilians on an aid flotilla attempting to take humanitarian aid to people who have been terrorized for the last 3 years by Israeli terrorists, and their boat was intercepted in international waters and they were taken from that boat. That is called piracy and kidnapping. The IDF soldiers who did this were not operating under any jurisdiction because they were in international waters. This is an act of piracy. They should all be facing prison, or perhaps even execution for piracy in international waters. I mean, that's if law existed, you know what I mean? But I mean, why would you do that though? Why even bother trying to get into Gaza Strip when you know what's going to happen? That's the point. The only good thing that's really come of it is, and it's a strange thing to say, is the publicity that has surrounded the mistreatment of the flotilla, and the fact that Ben Gavir posted a video showing basically him torturing and abusing the flotilla members, 400 people held in stress positions in the blazing sun and all sorts of stuff. So that's really the only good thing that came of it. As much, you know, as terrible as it was for the people, that's really all that was achieved. I mean, it showed the face of Israel for what it is. And if that's what they do to the flotilla people, one of whom was the president of Ireland's sister, I think. Well, you know, what do you think they do to the Palestinians? And bear in mind that every Palestinian prisoner is in jail because they're believed to be a terrorist, and they've just brought in the death penalty for all Palestinian terrorists without exception. So all these people basically go to jail. They get tortured for 3 months at least, because they can only keep them for 3 months now, and then they have to execute them. And that's what's going on in Israel. And this is what Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and Randy Fine and what's that little guy, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, this is what they all support, folks. They all support this type of child abuse. They all support the bombing of Lebanon that Israel is carrying out at the moment, bombing civilian homes, bombing children while they're sleeping at night. All this sort of stuff is supported by your politicians. And you can say, well, you know, our country isn't funding this. Well, politicians all operate on an international stage. Whether they're on a national stage or not, they're all on an international stage as well. And any politician who is supporting Israel, or any politician who has not spoken out against the actions of Israel, is consenting to what Israel is doing. Even if they've been silent on the issue, that is tacit consent. And if they're going to do this to them, then what do you think they have in store for you? I mean, I've said this so many times, folks, it's ridiculous. You know, and all the stuff that's been going on to get Trump to keep going as well. I mean, I think Trump, as I've said, I think he realizes that he's going to go down as the worst president in history, the man who destroyed the U.S. economy, the man who lost all the U.S. bases in the Middle East, the man who crashed the world supply chain. A lot of with this Abraham Accords as well. I mean, even wanting to get all the Arab nations to sign it, saying it's a mandate, I've put it out there, this is it, this is historical, this is going to bring peace to the Middle East. When they, of course, don't sign it because it's ridiculous, that they should even be asked to be signatories of something as ridiculous as the Abraham Accords, then he'll be able to blame the Arab nations. He'll be able to shift blame, say, well, it wasn't me. I brought forth a viable proposal for peace. It wasn't me who wouldn't sign. It was the Arab nations. It was Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Of course, Israel wants to attack Saudi Arabia because they want to annex the top half of Saudi Arabia for Greater Israel. So you can see how all this is going, folks. It's just such a puppet show at this point. But Trump, I think he realizes that he's going to get the blame for all this, and he's not very smart. I mean, he's kind of, you know, he can be like a, I don't know, I mean, he's a good actor. He can kind of endear some people to him, for God knows what reason, but he's not very smart. He might be, you know, people say the art of the deal, he might be a good businessman, all that sort of stuff. I don't think he's even really that good a businessman. I mean, he's been bankrupt so many times and bailed out. I don't think he's very smart at all. And he's been doing terrible things with terrible people. I mean, cue the Epstein files. And he's over a barrel. I mean, even the threat to kill Ivanka Trump, that they said, well, there was a, you know, threat that came out by Iran that they're going to kill Ivanka. Well, I would say this is Israel saying, if you don't do what you're told, we're going to take your daughter out, we're going to blame Iran. All of the death threats made towards Trump, I mean, Trump says he's going to bring in these Abraham Accords and all this sort of stuff, and then suddenly there's some guy who wants to shoot him at the White House. What's that all about? You know, where'd that come from? I mean, it all seems pretty contrived to me. You know, I mean, every time there's something going wrong, he's losing popularity, there seems to be another assassination attempt. Funny how that works. Hey, Nacha, what's going on, little girl? This little dog, folks, she's such a wonderful little girl. I don't know how to turn this camera around. It's crazy. There it is. She's a wonderful little girl. She follows me around everywhere. I do have a lot of trouble with this camera, though. I'm still getting used to it. You can't just flick a button on a little control thing by your thumb anymore. You actually have to touch the screen and spin it around, and I always have trouble with it. But what was I saying? Yeah, assassination attempts. I think this happens every time he's losing popularity, folks. It's ridiculous. But there's still so much going on in the world, and this war in Iran, and what Israel is doing. See, this whole war with Iran has really given Israel just open slather to do whatever it wants. Yes, bombing Gaza. As soon as he announced the Abraham Accords, there was, like I said, that assassination attempt against Donald Trump. They went in and started just obliterating residential homes in Lebanon, and they started bombing the shit out of Gaza again, in Gaza City, bombing the refugee camps, just because they're pissed off that Trump has attempted to try to make some sort of a peace deal with Iran. And again, you know, they want the world to hate Jews. There's been a lot of outcry around the world, in New York, in all sorts of places, against Jews because of what Israel's doing. And the Zionists want this. They want Jews to feel threatened in their host nations, diaspora Jews, all Jews to feel threatened in their host nations and feel that they must return to Israel. Apparently there was a huge protest of some faction of Jews, I forget all the names of their different factions, in New York just today or yesterday, who were speaking out against the occupation and against the bombing of Lebanon and against Zionism. I was in New York just yesterday or today. But again, you know, you see this sort of stuff, you've got to wonder, well, are these the good Jews, are they? Well, why don't they go to Israel and tear the government out of power? There seems to be there's a lot of them there at that gathering. So why didn't they all get on planes or boats and go to Israel and tear the government down and replace the government with one that is a little bit more moral and tolerant? You got to wonder. Or is this just being done for show? Well, see, it's not all of us. There's a lot of us here that are protesting. Well, if you're protesting it, then why do you call yourself a Jew? And again, I mean, I know Zionism and Judaism are two different things. You know, Judaism is a religious faith. It's an ideology. Zionism is a political movement that was actually founded by an atheist who didn't actually follow the Torah or anything like that. So interesting. It's interesting how the Zionists have worked to equate Zionism with Judaism when they're not, there's nothing to do with each other really, except that Zionism wants to establish a home for the Jewish people, but unfortunately it wants to do so on stolen land and through barbarism, terrorism and genocide, which is really not acceptable. But yeah, but it's been crazy, folks. I mean, the world's just gone nuts and it's continuing to go nuts. You know, and the more they say they're attacking Gaza because of Hamas, I've already shown you many times that Israel created and funded Hamas. Bibi Netanyahu admitted on camera that he paid Hamas $3 million a month.
Netanyahu, who is against peace and who is against having a Palestinian state, dealt with Hamas for a long time as a strategic friend.
אני מעביר להם מסרים כל הזמן, אני מטעה אותם, אני מעריך להם, אני מש, מהטל בהם, משקר, ואחר כך נותן להם מכות על הראש.
It was important for him to keep Gaza under the control of Hamas and keeping the West Bank under the control of Fatah and preventing them from being united in any way.
And this is, of course, just to get them to maintain the charade that there are terrorist forces attacking Israel when they're not. And in regard to Lebanon, they're saying they're attacking Lebanon because of Hezbollah. Well, Hezbollah was formed in 1982 out of necessity because Israel was attacking and annexing land in southern Lebanon. And the Lebanese government, which are simply Israeli puppets, the way the Shah of Iran was an Israeli puppet, they're simply allowing them to do it. So Hezbollah was formed to stop Israeli terrorists from coming across the border, killing Lebanese people, stealing their homes and annexing their land, as Israel is so prone to do with its neighbors, like it's done with Gaza, like it's done with Palestine, like it's done with West Bank, like it's done with Golan Heights, like it's doing with Lebanon now. It's taken over 60% of Gaza Strip now as well, and is taking over the rest, just gradually corralling them and killing them, and, you know, saying they're all terrorists, we need to arrest them. As soon as we arrest them, well, we can execute them. That's the law. It's sick, you know. And again, all of our Western governments are supporting this. Something that's been happening behind the scenes through all this is, again, the smart grid. And with the smart grid are coming massive, massive data centers. You know, now bear in mind, we're told about, you know, global warming and all this sort of stuff. We've got to have electric cars because we don't want to, you know, have any pollution or any of this sort of stuff. So, you know, you can't use gasoline, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to use, you know, a shopping bag for life, don't use plastic bags, you know. And yet they're creating these data centers which use an insane amount of electricity. Some of them are huge. There's one that they're building, I think it could be in Idaho or something like that. I might have that state wrong. Could be Ohio, could be Idaho. But it's around 62 square miles, the size of this complex. 62 square miles. It's not a typo. And you think of the amount of electricity that's going to use. And some of the reports that I'm hearing about these things, apparently the noise from the data centers is phenomenal. There was a guy who did a report on what it sounds like a half a mile from one of these data centers in the daytime and what it sounds like at 1 o'clock in the morning. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, also along with the noise, apparently you are also subject to this ethereal glow. So it never really gets dark because of the lights at the data center. And this is just for a normal size one.
But I really value silence. And so listen to this, though. Okay, this is someone recorded this. You hear it during the day. Or this kind of looks like it's kind of going into dusk. And then there's also the second half of the video shows the noise at night. Just listen to this. This is what it sounds like living half a mile away from a data center. Imagine if every time you were outside, whether you were barbecuing, having a campfire, camping in your backyard, gardening, whatever it is, imagine if this is what you heard, okay? So this is the noise at 1 a.m. That's insane. I would be so angry if I lived in, you know, in a rural area when that's where these things are being built, right? They're buying up farmland, they're buying up cheap land, and that's where they're building these data centers. Imagine you you know, have lived your whole life in a rural area and you grew up listening to the quiet sounds of nature at night and that's what you hear, but it's not just the noise, it's the light. Okay, so here's another post. This says, a massive data center is now bathing the rural town of Crowell, Texas, in constant artificial light, leaving residents under a 24/7 industrial glow. In other locations where data centers have been established, light pollution is becoming a serious problem for residents. So this is, even in the middle of the night, this is what it looks like. When you're supposed to be able to see the stars and see the sky and have pitch black, I mean, this is, again, a rural town of Texas. This is what people are seeing at night. Like, this is just, it's infuriating. And this, we're not even getting into the purpose of these data centers. I mean, to me, these data centers are the hub of the control system. Of course, they're doing other things, like they're processing AI cat videos, and of course, there's stuff like that happening. But fundamentally, though, these AI data centers, these are the central hubs of a digital prison. Like, that's what they are.
Yeah, so imagine what it will be like when they build data centers that are 62 square miles in size. And the thing is, you know, people can complain about all these data centers and all this sort of stuff going on, but you know why they're building the data centers, folks? It's because most of the world out there use smartphones. They drive smart cars. They have smart fridges, they have smart phones, they have smart TVs, they have smart companions, they have smart watches, they have smart everything. Everything's hooked up online. Your watch is online. Your earplugs are live streaming to a Wi-Fi connection, which isn't just being picked up. You know, what you're listening to on your cell phone through your Wi-Fi earphones isn't just being picked up by your earphones, it's also being picked up by trackers and the tracers and the people who process all the information, because people put their entire lives online on their cell phone. They carry these cell phones with them everywhere, every moment of every day. There are little tracking devices every 50 meters through most cities now, so they know exactly where you are at all times, and that's why these data centers exist. It's because people live their whole lives online. People don't use cash anymore. As much as the fiat system's bad, it's better than taking your phone with you everywhere you go and paying for everything digitally, because if you didn't do that, well, you wouldn't need these data centers, would you? So, you know, people complain about the data centers, but they use all the devices that power the data centers and give the information to the data centers. They put their whole lives online, everything. I mean, I still do a lot of stuff online, sure, but I do it all on my laptop at home. I have a cell phone, yeah, because I needed one to open a bank account. But that's it. It stays home. Even when I travel, the only time I ever use my cell phone is if I arrive in a place and I need to get an Uber from the airport. I do that. And then when I get to wherever I'm going, the cell phone stays in the luggage until I need to get an Uber back to the airport. That's it. I've never made a phone call on it. I've never made a text on it. I just don't use it. It doesn't travel with me anywhere. I don't give it any data. I know even when it's switched off, of course, it sends out a signal, tracking signal. Of course it does, because that's what they do, which is why it stays in the motel or stays at home or stays wherever I happen to be. But I don't take it with me, ever. And I've never paid for anything using a card. I've paid cash. When I arrive somewhere, like I arrive in a country or whatever, I mean, generally I'll pull cash out of wherever I happen to live, and I'll go to a currency exchange and I'll exchange it to whatever currency it is. If I'm going to Europe, I'll exchange it to Euro. If I'm going to the United States, I'll change it to USD. You know, and I'll just do that, and I'll arrive with cash and I'll spend cash the whole time that I'm there. That's just the way I do it. That's the way I've always done it. I've never actually paid for anything using a card. So I don't feed the data centers. Sure, I do to some degree because I put stuff online through BitChute, through X, whatever. But that's why the data centers exist. It's because people create so much data to create the need for these things. That's what it's all about, folks, and that's what it's always been about. And they mess your mind up with it as well. I mean, even trying to get away from it. Like I said, I use cash all the time. I saw a thing on the Brave browser the other day. There was a conference, I think, called DashCon. And they were talking about the evolution of digital cash. And I thought, well, that's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it? Like, digital is digital and cash is cash. That's like saying you're a sovereign citizen. You can't have digital cash. You can have digital currency, but you can't have digital cash. Cash is cash. Cash is what's in your pocket when the internet goes down and the power goes off. You can still pull this stuff out and hand it over to someone in exchange for something. That's called cash. You can't do that with digital anything. But I thought, what a mindfuck. They're sort of really trying to get people into this, sort of merge them with the CDC. And I thought it was interesting to actually see that on the Brave browser, because, you know, I like the Brave browser. I think it's a good browser. But yeah, I've been offline for 3 weeks, folks. Well, 12 days anyway. I mean, 12 days I was offline and in the forest. Then I got back here to Mexico about a week ago. Nacho, Vin. Nacho. What are you doing? Nacho's doing a runner on me, is she? She thinks it's getting close to dinner time up there. Nacho, Vin. She's a great little dog, though. I really love this little dog. But yeah, I got back sort of last Wednesday, and it's could have taken me this long to want to do a video or even feel like I had anything to say. The thing is, like when I was in the forest, I don't know, I just really sat down and started thinking about things differently. I was sitting there with a sequoia. And, hello, Sol. You little dogs, folks, they're so cool. Nacho, Vin. She's playing hard to get. Yeah, when I was in the forest, I just started really thinking about things. And I realized how much I miss what the world was before the internet. I mean, the internet, it's been great. All sorts of information we got access to. We had suddenly instantaneous communication with everybody. Even playing games, like playing computer games with people in different parts of the world that you've never met before, but you're all interacting together at the same time, all of this sort of stuff. I mean, I used to do that with my son. We used to play Enemy Territory. And it was fantastic, playing with people from all over the world, which sort of led me to the communal aspects of the internet and the community. There used to be chat programs like ICQ and PalTalk. PalTalk's probably still there. I wouldn't be surprised if it is. But it was a real communal sort of a thing. And then it kind of changed and it turned into more of a shopping mall. But there was still access to stuff. And then things started getting censored, more and more censored. Information started disappearing. Websites started disappearing. But I mean, it has been great. I mean, I've traveled the world. I've met an enormous amount of people. I've been able to do videos and bring them to the world and all sorts of stuff and connect with literally millions of people who've watched my stuff all over the world. Even with my YouTube channel, like 240-something thousand subscribers on my YouTube channel. Not that I get 240,000 views on any given video, but I think it's probably ghosted on a lot of places anyway. But the point is, I mean, it's been great. We've managed to connect with a lot of people. I've managed to get access to a lot of information, helped wake up a lot of people. And information that you found on the internet, I mean, a lot of it was obscure, but a lot of it was actually quite reliable, better than what you would find from mainstream sources. And then again, censorship started happening all through it. And then, as I predicted 10, 12 years ago, back in 16 years ago, in 2025, AI will come online and our relationship with the internet will change, which is exactly what happened. And now here in 2026, it's really difficult to know what's real and what isn't on the internet anymore. Case in point, there's a video that I saw just the other day of a woman offering encouraging words to those who might be having difficulty waking up their friends and family. And you look at this woman and you listen to what she's saying here.
You're trying to wake people up, your family, your friends, the people you love most, but they don't listen. They laugh, roll their eyes, and call you crazy. And deep down, that pain hits hard because you see something they don't. You feel the shift happening in this world. You notice the cracks in the illusion, the energy changing, the truth rising through the chaos. And all you want is for them to see it too. But not every soul awakens at the same time. Some people are still meant to sleep a little longer. That's not your failure. Your mission was never to force anyone into the light. Your mission is to become the light, to stand strong in your truth, even when nobody understands you. Because one day, when the storm arrives and their world starts falling apart, your energy, your peace, and your truth will become the torch they remember. Keep shining. The souls meant to rise will find you when they're ready.
Now you see that, and there's a woman who is, of course, quite beautiful, who has a generic background behind her. She has these full lips that Elon Musk likes so much. And she's obviously AI. A lot of people might not know that, but that's an AI woman. It's obviously AI because of the generic background and the type of beauty that she displays. If you start looking at a lot of the AI creations that you're seeing on X and other places, some of the AI video clips that you see of bands and stuff, they all have these same generic lips. Just a couple of little freckles here and blemishes. But the generic background absolutely gives it away. That's an AI woman. So you see that and you think, well, that's a positive message. But when you listen to how it's delivered, there was no real soul in the delivery. And you've got to wonder, is she telling you that it's all good, stay positive, stay empowered? Or is it saying, just relax, do nothing, just be at peace and know that people will wake up of their own accord when they're meant to. You don't have to do anything, don't worry, trust the plan. That's the thing, you know. I said a few months ago, maybe the end of last year, I said that AI is getting so good now that the timing has been perfect for the release of the Epstein files, because you're not going to know what's real or what isn't. I mean, the timing of the release of the Epstein files and the advent of what can be done with AI like Grok Imagine and things like this is perfectly timed, because this gives plausible deniability to anything that is leaked from the Epstein files. Any claims of videos of Donald Trump with children or anything like this, plausible deniability for all of it. You know, it was AI. And this has all been done by design. But what it's done for me as well, I mean, when I went and I sat in the forest and I just kind of connected back to who I am, I spent hours every day for like 10 days just wandering around through the redwoods by myself. People are saying it's dangerous, there's wild animals out here. And I'm going, well, all I saw was squirrels, so I'm good. But when I got back to Mexico and got back online, I mean, I got locked out of my Twitter account, and then I was back in my Twitter account for some reason. I got locked out of my email. So you've tried to sign in too many times. When I haven't, you know, we need facial recognition and all this sort of shit. It's just been an absolute pain trying to open my email for the last 5 or 6 days. I did manage to open it, finally got in there, all good. Tried for 5, 6 days to try to get in, and then woke up one morning, tried again, and it opened. So, ah, great. Then I had to restart my computer and it wouldn't let me sign in again. And so now I can't get in again, but just see what happens. But all this sort of stuff, I mean, this is what's sort of going on. And I'm thinking, well, wouldn't it be great if I could just pick up a telephone and call who I wanted to call? But you can't, because there's no landlines anymore. Wouldn't it be great if the world was the way it used to be? And I started looking at the internet and I thought, wow, I can no longer trust anything that I see on the internet. People send me a book and say, I wrote this book. Well, how do I know they wrote the book? I even had someone suggest that I write a book. Someone said to me, you know, Max, there's an AI site where you can just put in the idea you want and the basic outline and synopsis of the book that you want and tell them how many pages and chapters you want, and the AI will write this book for you in a matter of minutes, and then you can proofread it and see if you want to publish it. And I thought, well, why on earth would I do that? It wouldn't be my book. If I was to put my name on that, well, how dishonest would I be? You know, and unfortunately, that's what people are doing. People are writing essays, posting articles, whatever, for newspapers, even articles on Twitter, whatever. And they're not even writing them. AI is writing them. Videos that you see, so realistic that AI. So now, like, they've closed all the libraries, they've closed most of the places in the real world where you can actually go to find real information. So we turned to the internet. And now, well, you can't trust the internet either. So it's kind of caused me to almost completely lose interest in the internet. It's interesting. I mean, I sit in front of the screen now and I look at it and I can't really see what I want to do. Like, where am I going to go to get information? You go into places like X and it's just a Zionist swamp of people saying how great Israel is and calling anybody who speaks out against them anti-Semitic. And it's just like a loose farm, like a loose harvest, the whole thing. I mean, they want you to go there and get emotional. They want to harvest that energy. Imagine what it's going to be like if they can get you all trapped into these data centers, what they're going to be able to do. You know, once they get you into these data centers and you're in your electric car and you've got your digital currency and all this sort of shit and they can switch you on and off at will, suddenly your car doesn't start and your currency doesn't work. You get frustrated and you get more and more frustrated. And I mean, they're going to be harvesting all this sort of energy. They're going to be loving this shit, absolutely loving it. And I just look at it and I think, look where it's gone. I mean, how do we get back to the old world that we had? What happens if the internet does collapse, if they turn everything off? Well, I don't think it's really going to. I mean, I don't think they're going to collapse the internet, but they're certainly going to collapse the supply chain. They're going to keep everybody trapped at home. You're not going to have fuel for cars. That's when you're in your electric cars and all this sort of crap, which they can geofence. And it's all going to be run by these data centers, but it's all because people choose to comply with this whole digital enslavement system that's been rolling out for so long. And I've been saying this for so long. So long. I mean, here in Mexico, as I think I mentioned before, I think at the end of June, you have to submit facial recognition and digital ID in order to keep your cell phone number, even if you've got a prepaid cell phone account. I have a prepaid cell phone account. The only thing I use it for is my banking app. That's it. I can still hook up to the banking app via the internet, but sometimes to approve a payment, they want to send you a message on a text or by WhatsApp or whatever, which of course you need a number for. So this is how they get you. So that's something we've got to think about. See, there's all this sort of stuff that they do in order to trap you into this digital prison. So things are getting really, really interesting. But like I said, all this is happening in all these data centers and all this crap is going on simply through people's compliance. You know, and I've been coming on and doing this and trying to wake people up for so many years, and I just think, should I still do it? You know, someone sent me a letter the other day. It's a very complimentary letter. I can't remember your name if you happen to be watching this. It's a very complimentary letter, and I thank you very much for your kind words. But at the end of the letter, a woman asked the question, with all the information that you've got, and knowing all the stuff you know, how has it enhanced your life? And I thought, what a profound question. Just because of the use of the word enhanced. And how have I benefited from it? Well, I know a lot about what's going on. I've got to travel the world. I've got to meet thousands of people. I've done all sorts of things that I never could have dreamed of doing. And I know how the system works, and I know what to expect. I know how to navigate my way through it. I know not to have any stake in the outcome of any of this because, you know, I'm getting old and ultimately I came here to die anyway. And no matter what I do, I'm not really going to change the world because it's up to the individual. All I can sort of really do is plant seeds. So I've succeeded in those things, but enhanced my life. Well, as far as my life, my standard of living, my security, it's rare for me to live anywhere much longer than 6 months. forget trying to have a relationship with anybody. I've ended up isolated, profoundly lonely sometimes, and been placed into a situation where I'm living in self-imposed exile as my only really viable means of self-preservation. So I don't know what you would call enhanced about any of that. And also, of course, subject to constant trolling and bank account closures and all sorts of crap that they put me through. So, you know, it's kind of like a yin and yang thing. There's a good side in that I feel I'm on my life's path, and I know that I've helped a lot of people. I mean, even in the physical world, just with stuff I've done for people, I know it's really helped them. And I get emails from people saying how much I've helped guide them through their own lives and help change their perspective and help them weather many storms. So there's that good side of it. But as far as enhanced my life, I've actually had to make a great deal of sacrifice in order to continue on this path. So I don't know if really that's been enhancement, like I said. But then again, you know, even in saying that, it's like my life prepared me for this. I mean, like I had a messed up childhood, came from a broken home, I got kicked out of all my schools, ended up touring all around the place in bands, didn't live anywhere for years because I was playing in bands, was homeless for a while, all sorts of stuff. And it kind of prepared me to just keep floating around like a tumbleweed, you know? And I'm like that little weed that they get, the resurrection plant that you get in the forest or in the desert in Palestine, in between Jericho and Jordan, I think, where there's this tumbleweed called the resurrection plant, which just blows around for years. And then as soon as it touches water, it gets roots and grows and becomes green and full of life again. Actually got one back in Australia, and I actually gave a couple of them away to people, but I'm like one of them. I just kind of tumble around, and then suddenly I land somewhere like this, and then I'm sort of full of life again, but I just kind of bounce around. But yeah, I'm in a really interesting point in this process, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I mean, I was just offline for 10-12 days. 3 weeks since I did a video, which is like 21 days since I actually did a walk and talk and posted it. I posted a interview with someone. I did another interview yesterday that will probably get posted in a couple of weeks. But I've been pretty much offline for the last 3 weeks and completely offline for the last basically 10 days or 12 days. Except for like 5 minutes here and there. And I haven't missed it at all. I have not missed the internet at all. And in fact, when I came back here and got back online, I kind of looked at the internet and I could find nothing interesting in it. To me, the advent of AI has killed the internet because you can't trust anything anymore. Even a friend of mine who wants to send me a CD of songs he's written, I think in Suno. It's a bunch of stuff he's done. He's uploaded his voice, so it's in his voice and all that sort of stuff. But I don't want to hear it. I mean, I don't want to listen to songs that are created in AI. I mean, AI songs, I mean, sure, I've used them. That song, Adolf, and that song, Israel is a bag of shit. I've used a few AI songs, the Epstein songs and stuff. I've used them on the end of my videos because it's a useful tool in getting information out to people. But, you know, it's okay for something like that. It's okay to put an AI song at the end of a podcast if it contains information that is relevant to the topic of your podcast. But that's the only time you're going to listen to it, is at the end of that podcast. It isn't like you're going to go home and say, well, I need that song to add to my collection. And you're going to put it on and listen to it. You know, I've heard some good and some useful AI songs. Like I said, I've probably used half a dozen of them on my radio shows myself or on these video reports myself. But yeah, they're not something I'm going to listen to for entertainment. When I listen to music, I want to hear a human vocalist. I want to hear the emotion of a human vocalist. I want to hear someone doing the best they can and excelling in their craft. I want to hear a real drummer. I want to hear a real bass player, a real guitar player. I want to hear real musicians excelling at their craft. I'm not interested in an AI version of it. I don't care how good it is. That's not why I listen to music. I don't listen to music because it's a catchy tune and they're going to have all the thirds and fifths in the right place in the guitar solo and all that sort of crap. I want to hear a human being expressing themselves when I listen to music. So AI music can never do that. It can never have that. But a lot of the stuff that you see online now, you just don't know. One soul singer or something, there's a black soul singer. Apparently he's the most popular black soul singer on YouTube at the moment, and it's AI. There's some other girl country band, banjo in the band, heavy metal banjo sort of band. And again, all the girls look the same. They all look like AI. They've all got that same particular type of lips that AI seems to like so much. All got just the right amount of freckles and all that sort of stuff. They haven't been able to master any of the instruments yet. I haven't seen an AI guitar player actually play the notes that you're hearing. So it'd be interesting to see when they master that. I'm sure they will. It'll make it even more difficult. But yeah, AI for me, I mean, you can do pretty much anything now in AI. Write a book, write a song, create a movie. Set up a dating site, whatever. You could probably even be some ugly guy, be some guy like me. And I could probably go and open up an OnlyFans site and create some sort of AI avatar in some program and have her there chatting up all these guys on OnlyFans and getting paid for it. You know what I'm saying? It's gotten that bad. You've probably got guys that are actually doing that now, I think about it. So yeah, and OnlyFans and all this sort of stuff. This is all done to destroy society and destroy the West. You think about OnlyFans. You got some girls on there. There was some girl last year, she was in the news. She'd made like 67 million or something that year on OnlyFans. And she hadn't apparently done anything sexual. She'd never had sex with a guy on her channel, and she'd still made 67 million. I guess she took her clothes off and played with toys or whatever, I don't know. But you think about that, and so that attracts a whole bunch of other girls to go, wow, I can make 37 million or 67 million on OnlyFans on a year if I just get out there and just sell my body and prostitute myself to the entire world. The right guys out there might find me cute and then I will make $67 million. Then when she, and probably, I mean, they go to places like Dubai to do this because it's all tax-free in Dubai. That's why a lot of the OnlyFans people go there, apparently. So when a woman does this, she's displayed herself to the whole world, so she's basically a whore. So she's never going to find a guy who loves her for who she is. It's going to be one of her fans or something. And she's never going to develop into that bond with a guy where he cares and supports her. Because what's he going to have to offer her? She's got $67 million. She can do whatever she wants. You know, unless it's some guy with $67 million. And in that case, well, he's just going to see her as a sex object because she sold herself on OnlyFans anyway. So, you know, she's never really going to find true love or true happiness, which is what life is really about. It's a big part of it. You know, any young guys out there who might have actually fallen in love with her genuinely and wanted to meet her, well, she's not going to want to know about them because they don't have as much money as she does. And they probably destroyed themselves sexually anyway because they've been too busy jerking off at home over women on OnlyFans. So through this, you've got a whole generation of people that are likely never going to find love and are never going to find happiness and are never going to have families. Women are taught that it's unfashionable to be a mother. They don't have a baby in tow. And then suddenly they get to, like, you know, 35 or 40 or 45 and they think, wow, I really wouldn't mind a baby. I really wish I was a mother. But of course, they can't find any guy who wants to marry them because they're old and wrinkled now. Plus, they were a whore on OnlyFans 20 years ago, so why would anyone want them? So it's all done to destroy society, to destroy the West, to stop the West breeding. You know? Oh, good idea because of overpopulation. There is no overpopulation. You know, there's an underpopulation in white Western countries. We are being exterminated. We are not being allowed to breed. We're being told it's unhealthy to breed. Meanwhile, Jews are having 17, 18 children per family in enclaves such as Yoel, whatever it's called, and that other place in New Jersey, having like 16 to 17 children each. We're told that there's only 15 million Jews on Earth, but of course there was well over 15 million Jews on Earth in 1948, and there's probably around 100 to 200 million at least on Earth now, and they are everywhere and breeding like rabbits and being given land everywhere. Just recently, the guy, what's his name, Milei, Javier Milei in Argentina, said he's going to allow, I think, 400,000 Jews to come into Argentina as immigrants and form a Jewish community. So, and they're doing the same thing in Ukraine. I mean, they're everywhere. They're doing the same thing in the United States. They're everywhere. Far more than 15 million of these people, folks. Everything you've been told is a lie. But anyway, yeah, look, I'm just in a funny phase at the moment. And like I said, I'm going down to Acapulco sometime in the next couple of days. I'll bring you another video from down there. But I've just been in a really reflective state for the last couple of weeks. I haven't wanted to do a video. I haven't missed the internet at all. And I come back online and I look at things and everything's just exactly the same. Peace deal collapse. Israel's bombing southern Lebanon, killing families daily. Israel's bombing Gaza, killing people. Settlers are terrorizing people in Gaza. US politicians are arguing. Trump's putting on theatrical theater shows. There are threats of assassination attempts against Trump. It's all the same freaking thing. It's the same script. It's like recording Groundhog Day. Supply chain's still collapsing. Everything is exactly the same. The world is still in the same state that it was, exactly the way I left it 3 weeks ago. So what am I supposed to do? Just come on here and narrate the end of the world every day? Is that what it's really all about? Crazy, folks. Crazy stuff. But yeah, I will come and do another video soon. I just hope that people see that they hold the key. We are the solution. We are the way out of this mess. All the data centers that are happening, they're happening because you give them all the data. Stop using the data devices. Stop having smart fridges and smart watches and smart TVs and smart toasters and smart cars and smart cards and smart fucking everything. If it's smart, don't have anything to do with it. Use cash. Okay, we don't like the fiat system, but shop with cash. Don't leave a digital paper trail. Imagine if everyone just stopped using anything smart for 1 week. It would send a shockwave around the world. Who's prepared to do that? That's the way out, folks. You know, if people just wake up, well, we got this. But if they don't, well, it's going to go the way it's going to go. So you just got to find your way through it, like I've been saying so often. I have to just decide what I want to do, where I want to go, what I want to be. I like it here. But do I really want to be online? Do I really want to continue just doing these videos when the world's just going the way it is? No one's prepared to do anything. And it's a hard thing as well because, I mean, here's me saying put down all the data and all the stuff, but then I'm doing videos and posting it online so that you can get the information. But hey, just don't watch it on your cell phone. Don't take your cell phone out with you when you go. Watch the video reports on your computer at home. Don't have one? Sell your cell phone and get a laptop. Not a problem. Save up and get a laptop, whatever. Leave your cell phone at home, for God's sake. You don't need to be online all the time. Leave your cell phone at home and shop with cash instead of digital currency. And watch videos and surf the internet when you're home on a computer. And you'd be surprised at how much difference just that will make if people are prepared to do that. What can I say? But anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Like I said, we are going to try to get to Liverpool, travel permitting. I will hopefully be going to Europe in July, late July or early August, and be speaking at Liverpool. I think it's August 13th to 16th or 17th. You'll be able to get a ticket, link below, on Acapulco. You can use my name, Egan, and get yourself a 10% discount on the ticket. It's going to be good as long as travel permits us to get there. I think even if travel doesn't permit us to get there, then there will be some good speakers there anyway, I think. So that's all good. So, yeah, get involved in that, folks. And thank you to all the people who send me so many kind emails. Like I said, I'm locked out of my email at present, but, hey, I'm working on it. So we'll just see what happens with that. So if I'm missing any interview requests and stuff, I'm sorry about that, but I'm doing the best I can. Thank you to anybody who's ever made a contribution, of course. You people are all that's kept me on air. And I don't live a very high life, folks. So I live a pretty simple life, actually. So I thank you for that. Anybody who has and anybody who can, I really do appreciate it. And I know times are tough. But yeah, thank you for the support that everyone's given me over the years. But yeah, I'm going to leave it there for now. I'm going to leave you with something. I'm not sure what it is at this stage because I haven't really planned for much of this. I've been a little bit discombobulated since I got back from the forest. It's been really kind of weird being back in civilization and being back around people and all that sort of stuff. And even being back online, like I said, I kind of look at the internet and I just think, I don't even really want to look at it. Going to X and you just get angry within 10 seconds. You just want to rip people's heads off because it's just a Zionist fest. And it's just this big loosh harvest. That seems to be all that's going on in a lot of these platforms. And like I said, I don't really know what I can believe with anything that's being written or said or any videos or anything is. So much stuff out there now that's very questionable. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where we're going to go, folks. So I need to kick back and think about all this stuff for a while. But I'll bring you another video as soon as I can, and I'll look forward to speaking to you then. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.
Iran made a video about Charlie Kirk. I didn't even know that was in their wheelhouse. It was literally a video. You have this Iranian general just sitting in a chair with his face blurred. He's speaking in English, which means it's to me, okay? But he has an Iranian accent. I know it's an Iranian accent because I lived in LA for 10 years. But let me tell you about a Charlie Kirk. I'm like, what do you got for me, general? And he's like, did you know Charlie Kirk was killed by your government? I was like, yes, I did know that.
I did, actually.
He's like, well, while we were hacking Cash Patel for funsies, we got into your FBI's mainframe, no big deal. Apparently the password's Valhalla123. And we found documents that reveal that your government plotted the murder of Charlie Kirk, and it didn't go according to plan.
What?
Our government botched an assassination attempt? We would never, he said. Well, did you know Charlie Kirk was not killed by a bullet? He was killed by an explosive device planted into his microphone that was clipped to his shirt. I know. Mind blown. Better choice of words? Sure. I'm sure a lot of people are asking, what? Who could even plant an explosive device in a small piece of technology and detonate it remotely? Who would do that? But it's a thing, and it is real. 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 And it's Israel. They did it with pagers in Lebanon. By the way, where did we get this? Trevor? Best Buy? What is it? Tel Aviv Tech? Okay. He said the device was supposed to explode downward into Charlie's chest cavity to make it seem like a clean gunshot wound to the chest. So we would all be like, oh my God, he was shot. And they'd thumbs up the fake Tyler on the roof. Be like, good job, buddy. We'll see you in Valhalla. But it didn't go according to plan because the device misfired. Like, where have I heard that before? And a piece of shrapnel shot through Charlie's neck and it came out the place that we were supposed to see the bullet going in. Now, this was the part that he said that blew. Okay. This was the part, he said, that really opened my eyes. He said, because it misfired and because it exploded in all sorts of which ways, a bunch of pieces of shrapnel flew everywhere and a lot of them went down and lodged themselves deep into the concrete where Charlie Kirk was speaking. And this is why, the next day, a bunch of people came to repave the entire area. So Charlie Kirk is shot, and the next morning, a bunch of random guys from God knows where in Israel come and start repaving the entire asphalt. It's like, you could have chose a better time to do that. This is literally the weirdest, most eerie part of the Charlie Kirk case, aside from Erica. Is the second strangest part about the case. Like, if you were watching a crime drama like CSI Orem and somebody gets shot and then like moments later like, oh, nothing to see here, we're just start repaving the whole area, that would be like a 10-part series where they're trying to figure out like, who the f*** are these contractors? And so then the Iranian general was like, and this is how you know that it was your government who killed Charlie Kirk. Like and subscribe to my page. Hit the bell. I was like, do you have Lego content? The Iranian intelligence, they understand the American mind because they know that Charlie Kirk is a very sensitive issue in the United States. They understand that even better than I did. Because after Charlie Kirk was shot, I honestly didn't even know that much about him. I was like, oh my God, that's horrible. But I still did a stand-up routine because that's what I do. I would do it to any of you. Don't take it personally. I posted it on YouTube and YouTube took it down instantly. That's never happened to me in the history of my whole career. And you've seen some of the things I talk about. That's how many people flagged it saying no. They were upset. They were very sensitive about it. I didn't know you can't make jokes the same day. All right, that was up on my part. I should have at least waited for the cement to dry.